The following Dharma talk was given by Danika Shoang Ankele Osho at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shoan Osho is a Dharma holder and priest in the Mountains and Rivers Order. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered freely. If you would like to make a donation or find out more about our various programs, visit us online at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
Good morning, everyone. Good morning, everyone who's joining at a distance. I think mostly the Sangha is aware Shugen Roshi's in New Zealand this month, and he and Jimon got there safe and sound, and we have had an introductory weekend here at the monastery without him, which is very unusual for him not to be here. This is only the second time. And the first time he was unexpectedly ill and we almost canceled the retreat and then we did it anyway. So I just want to appreciate the monks and the residents. I guess I'm feeling unexpectedly moved for your practice and stepping up and holding space and serving. It's been a good weekend. It's been a good weekend. Let me just take a moment and collect myself, okay? Yeah. It turns out that may not be possible. So I'm just going to forge ahead, okay? Yeah. I'll tell you what I think is coming up for me. Love. Yeah. Which is actually perfect, because that's what I wanted to talk about in a kind of roundabout way. You know, we, for as long as I've been coming to the monastery, we talk about July 4th as Interdependence Day. And this year, I think we are doing less to celebrate than we have ever done. Basically, we're not doing anything. And it's kind of causes and conditions just worked out that way. And I think a big fat cause and condition is it's like kind of a complicated time to muster patriotic enthusiasm. Yeah. So sometimes we've had like a picnic or like, you know, softball. It's been years since softball or kickball or just kind of a like sense of an occasion. And today the occasion is us gathered together to practice the Dharma and to reflect on interdependence, which is the actual reality. Completely interdependent. So I wanted to explore a kind of pith teaching, a very sort of condensed summation, you might say, of Buddhist practice from this vantage point. This will be familiar to, I would think, all of the regulars and those of you who are joining us for the first time this weekend. It's like it's a good one to like leave with in your wheelhouse. Okay. So these are some lines from Master Dogen, who is a really important teacher and figure in Zen. And they're from Genjo Koan, which is one of his sort of most lauded teachings on how it's actualizing the fundamental point. How do we bring the truth of the Dharma? Right? We can hear a lofty teaching like there's no separate self. There's no separate, solid, permanent, independent self. How do we bring that alive? He writes, to study the Buddha way is to study the self. To study the self is to forget the self. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. That's what the Buddha saw. That's what the Buddha saw. His teaching on how things dependently arise is considered to be kind of the distinguishing feature of Buddha Dharma, dependent origination, and not you know, so much as a philosophical view, but as a direct experience. Daito Roshi used to say, your body and mind are the body and mind of the universe. And it turns out that's not a metaphor. So what is it to sort of turn our life in the direction of hearing a teaching like that and wanting to come closer to it? And we can't possibly... I'm going to see if I can just dry up and go forward with a little bit of a different, we'll see. We can't possibly know what we're getting into. But the weird thing is that there's some part of us that can recognize truth and resonate with that and want more of it. To study the Buddha way is to study the self. So, this weekend for the folks who are here for the introduction, we were a big part of what we're introducing, right, is Zazen. And then Zazen has these different forms that it takes, practice of fundamentally recognizing the world that we're creating with our thoughts and ideas and stories and projections, and starting to release that, practicing releasing that, which is a totally active, has to be engaged, has to be remembered to be engaged, because we are doing that on so many levels that are so hard to see. Practicing releasing those stories and that identity, and just coming back to the moment. So I wanted to, right from the beginning, kind of offer a very different image that is maybe more accessible, okay, of a way that we might understand or appreciate what's being pointed to when we speak about forgetting the self and being enlightened by the 10,000 things. All right? So this is a poem by Ross Gay. It's called Throwing Children. It is really something when a kid who has a hard time becomes a kid who's having a good time, in no small part thanks to you throwing that kid in the air again and again on a mile-long walk from the Indian joint as her mom looks sideways at you like, you don't need to keep doing this because you're pouring with sweat and breathing a little bit now. You're getting a good workout. But because the kid laughs like a horse up there, laughs like a kangaroo beating her wings against the light, because she laughs laughs like a happy little kid, and when coming down and grabbing your forearm to brace herself for the time when you will drop her, which you don't, and slides her hand into yours as she says for the 40th time, the 50th time, inexhaustible her delight, again, again, again and again, and you say, "Give me till the rosebud tree," or "Give me till the persimmon tree," because she knows the trees. And so quiet, you almost can't hear through her giggles, she says, "Okay," till the next tree, when she explodes, howling, yanking your arm from the socket, "Again, again," all the wolves and mourning doves flying from her teeny throat, and you throw her so high, she lives up there in the tree for a minute. She notices the ants organizing on the bark and a bumblebee carousing the little unripe persimmon in its beret. She laughs and laughs as she hovers up there like a bumblebee, like a hummingbird up there, giggling in the light, like a giddy little girl up there. The world knows how to love. Forgetting the self doesn't mean we turn into a zombie. It means the preoccupation with ourself starts to fall away. And what does that make space for? The 10,000 things. Everybody else. This weekend, there's been so much connecting. Connecting. I was having breakfast with someone who said, every conversation they'd had been like a really good conversation. Sometimes forgetting the self is present. But we're forgetting that constricted, self-critical, anxious, self-conscious, aggressive undercurrent or overcurrent sometimes, and we're just being real. We're just saying it like it is. We're just holding our head in our hands and saying, "Oh my God." Connecting. Sometimes forgetting the self, we're the child being tossed in the air by the day, by the breeze, by the blossoms, by the moon last night. I don't know if you caught that moon. Again, again. And sometimes we're the grown-up. Breathing a little heavy, breaking a sweat, but we're up for it because someone's having such a good time. Someone needs us. Some way we see like, oh, this is helping you. Okay, I'm not so tired after all. Okay, one more time. To study the way is to study the self. What is this self? When we sit down in the context of Zazen and we're given this basic instruction and simple practice, and all hell is breaking loose on our cushion, what do you think that is? I think it's what we call the self. All those thoughts and feelings. And as we start to forget the self, some space comes, right? That identification. This is me. It's like, if we sit still and see how much our thoughts and feelings change? And in a way, how crazy little it takes to change them? Can we start to see, like, okay, I'm not so solid after all? One minute I'm having a good day, and the next minute you take that tone of voice with me, and everything's shit from there. What? Changing, arising dependently, constantly in flux. We're superimposing I, me, mine. Now I'm in a good mood. Now I'm in a bad mood. There's just like ease arising in me, ease arising, struggle arising. What happens as we start to loosen that? Uchiyama Roshi has a phrase that I always find so evocative. He talks about Zazen as opening the hand of thought, right? So just as an image, it's like our habitual body, mind, heart that's kind of churning and consumed, right? It's like that clenched, sort of pressured grasp. And then the practice, what happens as we start to loosen that, right? Opening the hand of thought. How wide can it open? How wide can it open? No thought, no hand, no me, no you. To forget the self is the path. I think sometimes I've heard this teaching and just like boiled it down to the moment that I'm looking for, where like I forget the self. And that's a teaching, and that's an experience. And there's the path. What is it to release, relieve, loosen that self-clinging? It's a real thing. It's a real practice. It doesn't have to look any particular way. Someone this weekend asked me kind of a question along the lines of like, is it okay to practice just because it makes your life a little easier? You know, what if you're not interested or don't feel so motivated by like seeing into the nature of the self or reality or those sort of loftier things, but you see like, this is making my life smoother. That bumpy ride, it's smoothing out. Of course. Why do you think it's smoothing out? You're coming into accord with reality. That's going to be good for everyone. It's a great reason to practice. Somebody else asked, like, I'm concerned that if I take up this practice, it will mean that I need to step away from my career ambitions or kind of my participation in, corporate America, this kind of thing. Like, bring it there. God knows corporate America can use a little bit of your practice. You know? So if we're making distinctions or rules or edges or justifications about why we shouldn't be less self-centered, more awake and aware, more in tune with our life, kinder. Like, we should like look and see, like, what's the misunderstanding here? You'll be happier. And probably other people will be too, because that's how interdependence works. Nothing's cut off in its own little box or silo, which is why the suffering of the world also touches us. It's a path, and it's a path where we're going to have to learn how to be uncomfortable and how to be with our own uncomfortable feelings and experiences. So much of our self-centered effort is around avoiding discomfort. And so if we're wanting to see what's on the other side of like our self-centered effort, we have to be willing to experience discomfort. And within our Zazen, that means allowing what's coming up to come up, allowing our feelings and thoughts to arise, not attaching, and making a study and a practice of seeing what does that mean? How do you allow something to come up and not attach? Because it's a lot easier for some of us to just cut off, repress, get it out of there. That's not liberated. You still think there's something that's not allowed in the room. Now you've got to build a barricade to keep it out. That's not free. So we have a different method, which is like, come on, let it in. And then really look. Really be with. Muster forth your courage. Develop your concentration so you can be with. And see, what is it? Anam Thubten, who's a teacher in the Vajrayana school of Buddhism, says, this I is a fictitious entity that is always ready to wither away the moment we stop sustaining it. We don't have to go to a holy place to experience this. All we have to do is simply sit and pay attention to our breath, allowing ourselves to let go of our fantasies and mental images. As we begin to rest and pay attention, we begin to see everything clearly. We see that the self has no basis or solidity. It is a complete mental fabrication. We also realize that everything we believe to be true about our life is nothing but stories fabricated around false identities. I am an American. I am 30 years old. I am a teacher, a taxi driver, a lawyer, whatever. All of these ideas or identities are stories that have never really happened in the realm of our true nature. In Buddhism, we talk about the two truths, right? The truth in which I am a taxi driver. We can't deny that. Then your family's really gonna think you're weird. But it's not the deeper truth, right? It's a relative truth, we say. It's a relative truth. And when the relative truth is seen for what it is, a relative truth, then we can play in that field and use it for good. That's an amazing way to live. working through our fear and steering by the light of pure intention, good intention, doing our best. It doesn't have to be perfect. It won't. It won't be perfect, and then in this other way, like, it's already so perfect. And we don't have to, like, get all in a tangle about trying to sort it out, you guys. It's like, be present. Be present. To forget the self is to be enlightened by the 10,000 things. Doesn't it feel good to pay attention to what's happening? Like right now? Like when you have a, for those of you here for the weekend and all of you who've engaged in this practice, when you have a caretaking assignment and you can actually enter it, even just for a moment here and there, let's say, and be present just with that one thing, that's letting the 10,000 things enlighten you. It's so intense the way our contemporary culture is like such a, there's so much effort exerted to take our attention, right? To own our attention. And we like give away our sacred attention so cheaply, you know? I mean, I have this thing where when I work on talks, I always am, I don't know what it is about my process, but I end up having to like watch some things on YouTube along the way. And it's like, it's not like it's really obvious like why I'm watching that and what it has to do with the talk. Like Gokhan has walked in on me and I was been watching like a clip of a movie and he's like, oh, you're working on a talk. So it's like not, and so I was doing that while I was working for this talk, on this talk, and I knew what I needed for like the sort of like the inspiration. I wanted to listen to this song. It's so great. It's called Machi, and it's by Pia Luzi. So you can file that away if you want. and then that suck-ass algorithm threw up a bunch of other stuff. And I was like, okay, let me just see. So I get it. I get it. Let us take back our attention. Wherever else we may be using our awareness, let's not miss today. There is a miracle unfolding all the time. If we feel separate from it, just like, can we go outside someplace where we touch nature and just be quiet for a minute or two and take in that pulsing life that we're a part of? Someone at breakfast this morning was saying, like, it's so intense, like time moves so fast. It's like there's no room for wonder. What a good thing to notice. What a good thing to notice, because then we know we need to slow down. We need to slow down and make room for wonder. I remember after at the end of a month of residence, there was a resident who was really new to practice here, and we were talking after, and he was saying that he had been out during Sishin, this was in the spring, looking at the bees moving around the cherry blossoms in front, and saw that he was thinking like, God, it's so inefficient. Like they go from one and then to over here and like back and forth and all around. It's like so inefficient. And then he realized, he was like, maybe they know something I don't. Like, what's so great about being efficient? Sometimes we need it, right? Sometimes we need it. For sure. Coming to the aid of people and the flooding that's been happening in Texas. Like, you want an efficient response, right? People's lives are at stake. But so often we bring that mindset and it's like, there's something more important. There's something more important than efficiency. Trusting and letting nature teach us. Being enlightened by the 10,000 things means recognizing that how we live is also like how we live together. How we live together. That we are learning to take care of ourselves and learning to take care of each other, and we need both of those. We need both of those. So on the first night of the retreat, I mentioned to the participants that before Roshi left for New Zealand, he and Gokhan Osho and I sat down and he kind of went through things that he felt were important to bring up for the weekend. And one of the things that he brought up that I think Gokhan probably touched on yesterday was metta practice, loving kindness practice. So this understanding that we're training the mind and we're training the heart, and there's an aspect of learning how to steady our awareness and attention and be cognizant, actually conscious of what's going on in the mind, and learning how to work with the mind of grasping and aversion. And there's also like so that's kind of if you know, I think a lot of the language that we use is around like letting go and like kind of trusting, like letting the way move through, right? We don't have to get in there and do a lot. It's really about like coming back to the present, trusting what's already here, trusting yourself. And then another really complementary practice that's foundational to Buddhism is the cultivation of loving kindness, metta, maitri, this kind of goodwill, sentiment, feeling, energy that where you practice cultivating towards yourself and also towards all beings. And it's like also already there, and just like we're cultivating the mind, which is inherently still, you don't believe it. The heart is inherently radiant and expansive, but we're cultivating. We have to train the mind to discover that natural resting. And so too, we can train the heart to be in touch with and discover that natural warmth and care and love. And so in different schools of Buddhism, this is like taken up with different skillful means. And in the original teachings of the Buddha, His teaching was on actually bringing forward within the mind and the heart a feeling state, an inner feeling state of care, of love, and that you start with yourself and then you practice expanding that out and radiating it out into the world. In the Karaniya Metta Sutra, there's a section that says, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings. With a boundless heart. That's your heart. Boundless. Cherishing all living beings. Radiating kindness over the entire world. Spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outwards and unbounded, freed from hatred and ill will. Whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness, one should sustain this recollection. So maybe even just hearing that encouragement, you can see like, okay, we would really need to train in that. Right? That degree of boundless heart, cherishing all living beings. There's a whole section on like how you can't leave anybody out. All beings, radiating kindness over the entire world. It's like, what, little old me? Yeah. Spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, unbounded. That's a practice. That's a practice. So what I wanted to do with the last couple of minutes here is to do as an offering on Interdependence Day, to do a little bit of metta practice together. So we don't typically do any kind of guided meditation. That's really not our way in this school, but because it's a special occasion, I'm going to use Aya Kema. She is a nun in the Theravadan tradition, Western woman who ordained and trained for many years. And she has a version of a metta practice that I particularly like. Okay? You ready at home? So we'll just take a moment to feel our breath, shifting gears from kind of being in listening mode, refreshing your mind, and just coming into touch with your own breath for a moment. And now to let compassion, a sense of warmth, of care, arise in your heart for yourself and for all the dukkha, all the suffering and struggle, the stress, the hardship that has already happened in this life for you. Feeling compassion for yourself, for all the dukkha that will come yet. A sense of compassion for the places of struggle in your practice, the places of difficulty. And to just let this feeling embrace you and hold you safe and secure. Just keeping it to yourself to begin. Can you extend that compassion for all the hardship, all the struggle, all the pain? Letting yourself feel into the tenderness of that. Extend this compassion from your heart to a person sitting near you. Feeling compassion for all the dukkha in their life that has been, is there now, or may yet come. Compassion for the difficulties that arise in their practice. embrace this person in your heart. Give them a sense of being cared for. Extend your compassion to everyone sitting in this hall, remembering that everyone has dukkha, remembering that everyone would like care and concern, and embracing everyone with your compassion. Think of your family, of your parents, siblings, children. Let compassion for their difficulties and their dukkha arise in your heart and embrace them, showing them your care and concern. Bring to mind people near and dear to you. Have compassion for their dukkha, their difficulties, their pain. Embrace them with your love and compassion, your care and concern. Bring to mind people that you know only fleetingly or not so well, that you live near or work with, that you pass in the city. Know that each of these people has their dukkha, their difficulties, their struggle, their pain. And let your compassion arise in your heart for them. Let it radiate and embrace all of them. Think of people who you find difficult, people who you struggle with, people who you might hold outside, and recognize their dukkha, their struggle, their wish to be happy, letting compassion reach out from your heart to that person, those people, those groups, filling them and surrounding them with it, including them. Bring to mind all those people whose lives are far more difficult than ours. They may be in hospitals, in prisons, in refugee camps, in war-torn countries. They may be hungry, injured, sick, alone, without shelter or friends. And let this heart of compassion reach out to all of them, embracing them, feeling with them, touching their pain, wishing to help. Feel your heart radiating compassion, unbounded, that all beings are held in your heart. And then bring your awareness back to yourself, letting this feeling of compassion fill you, top to bottom, surround you, give you a sense of being helped and cared for. May all beings have compassion for each other.
Thank you for listening. To find out more about ZMM's programs, retreats, and residency, please visit us online at zmm.org.